This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour two of the Lombardi Line coming at you on a Tuesday, locked and loaded. Michael out at his office in Jersey. I'm live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Remember, if you miss any of hour one, you can always download the Lombardi Line in podcast form wherever you get your podcasts, as well as vsin.com/podcast. While you're there, you can also subscribe to the GM Shuffle while you're at it. We are having some fun here. And Michael, we like to start off the second hour of the program in the offseason with what's on Michael's mind. And this is always such a good segment because you get hot and heavy on a lot of topics. And I'm always curious to know what's stuck in your head today, and you're something you're mad at, something you're happy about. What do we have?
Well, I'm upset that this whole Drake May thing, because he played good in a little preseason or played improved. This first time he really played, he threw three passes in the opening game. Mm-hmm. They're considering starting him. Like, look, stay on the program. Don't listen to the noise on the outside. Yeah, everybody wants to see him play, but what's more important, him playing or having the best developmental plan that they can have for the young kid? And Jacoby Brissett might not have played. He threw an interception in the red zone. Okay, that happens. He tried to fit the ball in. He shouldn't have done it. He knows it. I mean, if you're going to grade it on one play, then it's never going to work. So for me, I think stick with the plan. Drake May, what I've seen happen too many times, and so have you, Stormy, these young quarterbacks, they go in, they don't have success. Then there's doubt that creeps in. Bryce Young, yeah, right? How much doubt is there on Bryce Young? And then their careers get off on the wrong foot and they can't get it back. Where Jordan Love, we didn't even know if he was any good. Remember the Kansas City game where he came in, he threw the ball 50 yards over the receiver's head. Everybody was like, oh, he'll never play. One play and he'll never play. So I think you have to be really careful with player development, especially at the quarterback position. And you're not winning a Super Bowl this year. I know that's a shocker to most Patriot fans, but Patriot fans are smart. They know they're not winning a Super Bowl. They understand that. So it's going to take some time to develop this team, but develop the quarterback first. Get your offensive line to where you can pass protect adequately enough, and then move from there.
Yeah, listen, you're going to be hard-pressed to find somebody that's a bigger advocate than me for player development. And at my other role as an ESPN sideline reporter for college football, I love seeing these kids succeed and take that next step to the National Football League. And it really pains me when I see people that are thrust into an opportunity that they're not ready for. And we see so many quarterbacks that are ruined instead of developed. And you look at some of those guys who you already mentioned in Bryce Young or Zach Wilson, for example, in recent history, who you know that they have talent. Bryce Young was a Heisman Trophy winner, an unbelievable talent at the University of Alabama, and last year got crushed. Like, how many times did this kid get sacked last year because of a similar issue that you're talking about with the Patriots and their offensive line? The Panthers' offensive line struggled mightily. Are you going to want to do that to Drake May, who, of this quarterback class, one of the younger guys, had less experience? I mean, you compare his experience to Bo Nix's experience, right? It's night and day.
No question. And so you just got to be patient. Like, don't rush this thing. You're a young head coach. You're not ready to be a head coach. Well, Drake May's ready to be a player, right? Yeah. So, like, just take time. Learn on the job. Kind of get this thing moving forward. And then get going with it. Stay with the plan. Here's what we're going to do. Because I'm going to tell you something. It's going to be hard for the Patriots because they've lost their best defensive coach in Coach Belichick. Mm-hmm. They've lost to organize somebody who could run the game correctly and understood what was going on. Whereas, now they're with a head coach who's not sure. He's talking out of both sides of his mouth. That's going to affect the leadership of the team. Stick with the plan. Like, Brissett has done nothing to make you change the plan. Yeah. He's a hard worker. He's dedicated to his craft. Is he perfect? Of course not. He'd be a starting quarterback if he was. But let me say this to you. It's going to be really hard for Drake May to come in and play at a level that gives the Patriots even a remote chance to win.
And when you say Jerod Mayo talking out of both sides of his mouth, which he has, we cited it earlier on in the show, where in one part of an interview, he's talking about how we've had this development plan in place for Drake May. It might be unpopular, but we're sticking to it. And then in the same breath, when asked if Drake May could be the week one starter, he says 100%. And so it's, okay, which is it? And it's so unfamiliar for us, having seen the way that the Patriots have been run and who their head coach has been for however many years now, that this is odd. And it strikes you as something that we see from the Jets or the Giants, which, oh my gosh, Michael, I can't believe I haven't brought this up with you yet. So I'm like the dog from Up, squirrel. But the Giants, did you see the quote from GM Joe Shane where he says part of Daniel Jones' agent's selling point to him on the four-year $160 million extension was other quarterback deals coming up and that the number wasn't going to be as top of market as it seemed. Quote, there's not really a middle class of quarterbacks right now. Trust me, that was the sell of the agent at the time. They do their homework too. All these guys are coming up. Twitter Femi was hot immediately. He quote tweets and says, did he say this with a straight face?
There's nothing better than Twitter, Femi. There really isn't. I mean, I there's nothing better, you know. And look, I agree with them. I mean, just because other guys are coming up doesn't mean that Daniel Jones should be rewarded. What's that little nugget you give all the time? It has been since when he's thrown two touchdown passes in one game?
December of 2019. Daniel Jones has not thrown more than two touchdowns in a game since then. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can't make this up, right? And so for me, you know, I mean, Joe Shane, every time he says something, it just, again, for me personally, as a former personnel executive in the league, that's not how you do business. What was portrayed on Hard Knocks, on how they selected and procured talent, is not how teams should operate. It should be modeled out. It should be discussed out. There should be more than one option, but that goes without saying. So, look, I think the Giants, you know, whether they beat Minnesota in the opener or not, it's going to have, are going to be in for a tough season because they got to play perfectly to win games.
Yeah. Daniel Jones had a rough preseason debut in his first action since the ACL, a pair of picks, an ugly pick six. And this after his on the field presence at the start of last season before the injury was pretty ugly as well. So the beard might cover your face, but it's not covering your play, Daniel Jones. Let's go back to quarterbacks here real quickly, the rookies, because Sean Payton has been talking a lot about Bo Nix. He was on the Scoop City podcast with Diana Rossini and Chase Daniel. We played a little clip of the teaser yesterday, and the full episode came out this morning. And as I was listening to it, I really loved how Sean Payton was talking about the decision process in the draft and not knowing where these quarterbacks were going to be. He told GM George Payton, I don't want to get cute with any of this. There are other teams who are going to see what we see with Nix. We're not going to be alone in this. Take a listen to this clip. I really enjoyed Sean Payton here.
Minnesota's right ahead of us. The Raiders behind us. Minnesota goes up one. And then they draft JJ.
JJ.
And now there's one. And the Jets are still on the clock. And I said to George, call the Jets. Just call them. We don't want to move up unnecessarily a pick or two.
But you don't want another team to jump
I don't
in.
I don't
want
anyone,
them doing a deal
because you
had,
I don't want anything happening like Kansas City.
Mahomes.
Yeah, you can't have
anybody
that.
Can come.
Yeah.
And so we stayed on the – and then I think the Jets said to George, you called us.
And how could you blame him? But the Mahomes PTSD for Sean Payton.
Right, but what Sean just described there is what we talked about on draft day, Femi and I. What Sean did there is called freeze the pick. Okay, what does that mean? So exactly what it means, he's freezing the pick. He's calling the Jets to make sure somebody else doesn't jump in. And if he has to make a trade, he's right there to make a trade. It's like what the Jets said to him, you called us. What do you want? You know, well, I want to make sure that you don't trade this pick away is what I really want. I want you to pick because I know you're not picking a quarterback.
Yep.
That's what I want, but I don't want to have to trade you any assets to do that. So that's called freezing the pick. And where Sean, I think where he's coming from, a lot of this goes back to when he didn't get Mahomes. Mm-hmm. He wanted Mahomes. He was prepared to get Mahomes. The Chiefs credit them. We talked about this on the GM Shuffle with Brett Veach. They knew that the Saints were in play for him, and the Chiefs moved up quietly. They never said anything, and they made that deal. And look, let's face it, that thin line has determined who wins Super Bowls and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he's talking about let's not get cute, some guy, you know, could say, well, nobody else was going to pick Bo Nix. You don't know that. You do not know that. And I think what he was doing was freezing the pick.
Yeah, and it was really interesting, too, how he even addressed that Michael Penix getting drafted where he did to the Falcons threw a wrench in his mind because he was like, oh, if that can happen, then what else can happen? And now there's still three quarterback needy teams behind you guys, and there's only two quarterbacks left. So what's this going to mean? Are the Raiders going to do something dicey here? So from his standpoint, like, it was really cool seeing how the wheels were turning for him in the draft room. And then we didn't get it in that clip there, but he was asked as a follow-up, what was the draft room like after you guys did turn the card in and get Bo Nix? And he said it was electric. Like, everyone in that room, and particularly Sean Payton, very excited that he was able to get his guy. And that's why I just keep reiterating, even though he hasn't firmly announced Bo Nix as the starter, that's what it's going to be. Like, Bo Nix is his guy, and he's shown up in the preseason here so far.
No question. And here's what Bo Nix is going to do. And I wrote about this today. I wrote a column that I don't understand. Jimmy Buffett has a line in one of his songs where he says, questions that bother me so. And the question that's bothered me so all summer is, how are the Raiders 6.5-point win total and the Broncos at 5.5? Now, I understand the Broncos are 1-9 against the Raiders the last 5 years. I get that. But this Bronco team looks different than the Raider team to me.
Yeah. Jimmy Buffett also once said, I like mine with lettuce and tomato, but that doesn't quite have the same ring to it for a VSiN.com article. Great stuff. We will, still to come here on the Lombardi Line, get into an actual quarterback competition that has been resolved in Las Vegas. Adam Hill is going to join us in about 20 minutes. But when we come back, more rookie talk, not just quarterbacks, but a few interesting rookies that could be worth a look in Gridiron Goldilocks. Are these props too high, too low, or just right on the rookie class?
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, Michael, a couple quick injury updates in the National Football League. Rams quarterback Matthew Stafford was back at practice doing some 11-on-11 work after dealing with hamstring tightness over the course of the last week. Dolphins wide receiver Tyreek Hill, we just did your top skill position groups, had Miami as number two. Tyreek Hill apparently dealing with a minor injury. He wore a removable brace on his right hand during practice today, as of course I hold my left hand while I'm doing that, so classic Stormy. Deontay Johnson also just got back from a groin injury and apparently left practice today, his first practice back with a foot or ankle injury. So a couple things to keep an eye on here for sure, Michael. But Tyreek Hill with a brace on his hand, like, I feel like there's a lot of these high, like, big name players right now that have these little tiny minor things that are bugging them, and that's just going to make fantasy drafts that much more difficult. But as I lay these out, anything top of mind for you that catches your attention?
Well, I never was worried about Matthew Stafford, right? I kind of felt like he was always going to be able to play. I don't think he's, you know, I think he's going to be fine. I think that, you know, the hamstring, he doesn't have to move that much. I think he's going to be perfectly fine. I think Tyreek Hill with the one hand, I think that is problematic, but there's enough time in the season to get him ready to go. So I think the bigger news is from what's been buzzing around the league today is Ja'Marr Chase. Adam Schefter was on Pat McAfee today. And if you're in fantasy world, I think you got to be concerned about this, because he said, if Schefter said that he feels like he has no idea where this is going. We know Chase was back out there, but there's a lot of feeling that if Chase doesn't have a deal done by opening day, then he may not play week one.
Do you feel, I mean, and I know, I actually know the answer to this one with CeeDee Lamb, because he's having the same issue right now where he's not around and he's trying to get a deal done. You feel like CeeDee Lamb is more likely to get a deal done and play week one than Ja'Marr Chase?
No, I think CeeDee Lamb will have a deal done. CeeDee Lamb will play in week one. I would be shocked if he did. I really would be. I would be shocked. I would be shocked if Trent Williams didn't play in week one.
Okay.
I don't know about Haason Reddick. I have no idea about that other receiver in San Francisco. I don't know.
Yeah, whatever his name is. We're not going to talk about him.
Whatever his name
whatever
is.
Whatever his name is. No, that's a good note. I think especially because this Bengals team has talked so much about trying to keep those weapons together this year and that it's important. And like Ja'Marr Chase obviously is a massive weapon for Joe Burrow. And as someone who we talked about yesterday has now a significant futures ticket on the Cincinnati Bengals, I would really like it if Ja'Marr Chase was out there.
And me too. Yeah. I mean, look, I don't think it's going to mess the number up necessarily against the Patriots. It may lower it from 9.5 to 8.5, depending on who the Patriots start at quarterback, but they need them. They need them for what you want to accomplish with the ticket you have. They need them.
So to pay off the tease from last segment, Michael, let's talk some rookies here in our rookie edition of Gridiron Goldilocks. I'm going to go through a few of these players, not just the quarterbacks today, although that is where we will start. Are these prop numbers, these odds too high, too low, or just right? And we were talking about Bo Nix in the last segment. He has gone from as high as 30-1 for offensive rookie of the year to now 11-1. When you see that number and the expectations that there are for this Denver Broncos team and him, of course, in it, 11-1, too high, too low, or just right?
I think that's just right. I really do. He's going to start. Look,
that's high.
Denver
that's high praise,
year,
I think. That's high praise, I think, to say that's just right for Bo Nix.
You're right, because I've watched him play this summer. I know how enthusiastic Sean Payton is about him. And to win Rookie of the Year, I think you got to have your team's got to play good, too. Mm. Right. And I think then Denver's, and this is what I wrote about today, Denver with Payton, you know, their defense is good. Their secondary can be very good. Their front's good. Their offensive line is really good. They can run the football. I think he'll manage the game. Look, last year they won 9 games. They lost twice to the Raiders and they lost to New England at home in a game that they shouldn't have lost to. And they lost to Washington at home. Think about that. There's 4 games that they could have gone the other way for that team. And they would have been a playoff team after giving up 70 points. They had a huge lead on Washington at halftime and gave it away. Right. And then they straightened out the defense. The next week they go down to Miami and they get blown out. But they straighten out the defense. They play better. Then at the end of the year, they can't beat New England when they have the ball late in the game. They can't beat the Jets when they have the ball late in the game. They turn it over. I think this is a better team than we think it is.
Okay, I like it. Win total for the Broncos, just 5.5 compared to, as you write about in the article.
Do they look like a 5.5 win team to you when you watch them play this summer?
I mean, I agree. It's preseason, so I wonder how much stock I can truly put into it. But no, they look good. They look efficient. I believe that the Sean Payton-Bo Nix combination is poised for success, but their schedule is just really, really challenging. And this is a team that has a lot of, what's the right way to put this? A lot of darkness when it comes to the division and the teams that they haven't been able to have success. Again, they got to get that monkey off their back here. But yeah, I feel like 5.5 is too low, at least on the surface. It's not something I have in the account, but it is something that I feel. A non-quarterback I wanted to ask you about, Marvin Harrison Jr., for him to have 1,000-plus receiving yards this year is minus 125. So it's an odds-on number for him to have a 1,000-yard season with Kyler Murray in the Arizona Cardinals. Does that price feel like it's too high, too low, just right?
I think it's a tad too high.
Okay.
I mean, first of all, now, we know Jonathan Gannon just came out and said, we haven't seen it yet, that Murray's looks light years better than he did last year.
Leaps and bounds.
Thank you, Stormy. I don't know what that means, but it's leaps and bounds, you know. And so I think to me that most teams are going to go into the game saying, let's take Harrison out of the game. Let's make somebody else beat him. I think McBride's a really good player in fantasy. If you want to take a good tight end that nobody knows about,
yeah,
I think he'll catch the ball a lot. I thought James Conner was outstanding running the ball, but I think he's going to get doubled. And I think the way that Murray hasn't thrown the ball down the field the last 2 years could affect Harrison in terms of getting the 1,000 yards, not getting catches, but getting the big yards.
Would you be any more interested in the plus money price, plus 125, for him to have 7+ touchdown receptions?
Yeah.
Because he'll be a big red zone target, obviously.
I think so. I would rather play that than the receiving yards at negative money.
Okay.
Like you make always make a great point. Don't be scared about mine. Don't be scared about paying a tax. Mm-hmm. But sometimes, you know, with the way that the Cardinals are set up, you know, I think to me that's a little bit. I don't want to pay a tax on that. I just don't know enough about how good they're going to throw the football.
Fair point. And he is pretty high up there on the offensive rookie of the year board as well at plus 650. How about Caleb Williams? He's the obvious favorite for offensive rookie of the year. People saying that he is the, you know, the number one pick that has been put in the best situation as a quarterback that we've seen maybe ever with all of the weapons that are going to be around him. He's plus 135 to take home that honor. Too high, too low, or just right?
Well, you know, I think to me, this number is linked to the Bears. And you're paying a tax on all Bears numbers because, as you and I both know, haven't done this for a while, Bear fans bet and they move numbers. And so I think you're paying a higher tax than you should. I think it's a little too high, frankly. Mm. You know, I think you should get a better number because anything could go wrong here. You know, with this offensive line, he could miss some time. I don't want to wish it on anybody. But to me, you know, when you look at this, Bo Nix is 11-1. This guy's plus 135. They're both going to start as rookies. Who's got a better line? Who's got the better team? What do you think?
Again, the weapons for Chicago seem really good, but Bo Nix is so set up for success. It's just the schedule that works against him. So I can see the highs and lows, but I agree that the plus 135 seems like it's a little bit too short for me to want to get involved in. Like, that's not something that I would bet at all compared to the 11-1. I like that a whole lot better when it was 18-1, when it was 28-1. But now it's 11-1, and now it makes you don't want to join the party now because it feels like it's too late. Let me hit you with one more real quickly. Malik Nabers, who, of course, is the early round draft pick from the New York Giants. He's plus 175 to have a 1,000-yard season. Too high, too low, or just right?
No, I think that's probably a little too low. I think plus 70. I thought it was be like 150.
Okay.
Because, you know, he's going to get a ton of balls. And they're either going to be behind in games or he's going to make a play down the field. Like, I think unless he gets injured, he's going to get 1,000 yards.
What I say whenever anybody brings up Malik Nabers props to me is just, okay, but you have to remember still who's getting him the ball and how is this going to go? Like, I feel bad. I feel bad, Michael. Like, I am such a downer when it comes to Daniel Jones.
This is the business we've chosen. I mean, somebody's got to be honest about it. You're honest. Like, I mean, you know, we can lie to everybody and tell everybody's going to be great.
I'm just saying, no, I'm not going to take the plus 175 on him to have 7+ touchdown receptions for Nabers when I love the under 16.5 touchdown passes so much for Daniel Jones. I can't bet against myself here, but there I struggle to have a belief there, especially when what's behind Daniel Jones if he does get hurt or he plays really poorly. Drew Locke is injured. You're going to go back to Tommy DeVito? Like, yeah, what do we have here? So
we got chicken parm sandwiches.
We love it. Tommy Cutlets, baby. We're going to take a quick timeout. Shifting gears to talk a little Las Vegas Raiders with Review Journal journalist Adam Hill. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line rolling along as we welcome you back to the program. Going to get into a little Las Vegas Raiders talk. Excited to have Adam Hill join us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Writer and columnist for the Las Vegas Review Journal. Extremely dialed in to all things Raiders. And listen, Adam, Antonio Pierce comes out this weekend announcing Gardner Minshew as the week one starter. I joked with Michael yesterday, this game this past weekend in the preseason, the worst in NFL history as a job clinching game. Like, it's wild to me that AP didn't say, let's just take one more week to see where these guys are at. Walk us through this decision.
Yeah, I mean, I think after the way Gardner Minshew played, Aiden O'Connell probably should have just faked an injury and sat on the sidelines, and he may have had the job right now, but yeah, you're right. Like, it was uninspiring. And I think everybody in the building considered it uninspiring. I think you saw the video of Antonio Pierce when we had the Zoom with him the other day announcing the starting quarterback. It was pretty clear he was frustrated with both of them. He said after the game on Saturday, he said, you know, we've waited this whole training camp for somebody to take charge and show that they want the job and take command of it. And it just never happened. And so, you know, some say Gardner Minshew won the job maybe by default. I don't know if that's true. Like, he did play better than Aiden O'Connell throughout the training camp, but it wasn't good on either side. It wasn't like one played great, one played terrible, or they both played great and elevated each other through competition. It was uninspiring. And I think, you know, that's kind of how a lot of people feel going into this season. It's going to have to be better if they want to have any success.
All right. So, Adam, you watched all the practices. You've seen everyone. You're the head coach of the Raiders. You just got appointed by Mark Davis. Who are you picking to start at quarterback?
So it's interesting. I don't know what the objectives of this team are. It's very strange, right? I mean, I think they're a talented roster for the most part. They don't have a lot of depth, but they've got a lot of talent on the roster. So is this a team you think can make the playoffs? I think Gardner Minshew is probably the guy that could more likely take it to the playoffs, I guess. Look, I'm not going to commit strongly either way because I don't think there's a huge difference, but Gardner Minshew was better. And I tweeted out the other night, after the game, I said, look, Gardner Minshew has been the better quarterback. If this was an actual competition, I'd have to give it to Gardner Minshew because he's been more consistent. He's had better days than Aiden O'Connell has, for sure. But at the same time, we kind of know what Aiden O'Connell is, or excuse me, we know what Gardner Minshew is. We don't really know what Aiden O'Connell is. Like, I don't think he's, you know, a long-term answer as a starting quarterback, but I don't know. But there is a caveat to that because I saw a lot of people come back and say, hey, play the younger guy. Neither one played great. Play the younger guy. Who's the younger guy? Aiden O'Connell is 26 years old next week. He's 2 years older than Trevor Lawrence. Like, think about it. That's crazy. He's 5 months younger than Justin Herbert. Like, this is not a young guy. I know he doesn't have experience. And when you say the younger guy, it's, hey, it's the guy that hasn't been around long. You don't know what he has, and he doesn't have that much experience at this level. But he's not exactly young. So that wouldn't be the answer either to me. But I do think he's more unknown. So maybe you can find lightning in a bottle with him. I just don't know. Like, I'm not committing to it because there's really not a great answer, I think. Yeah.
And Antonio Pierce did say in that Zoom, right, he cited the experience of Gardner Minshew as one of the elements that he does bring to the table. He was a minus 125 favorite to ultimately earn the job. They bring him in and pay him with the thought process that he's going to be the guy. I just think there was a lot of talk for a while that Antonio Pierce kind of had this affinity for Aiden O'Connell, the loyalty factor when he stepped in at the back end of last season. But obviously quarterback is a huge part of this, but the offense as a whole, where do you view this unit this season?
So, I mean, I think they can be good. The offensive line is weird because we don't really know where they're going to be yet right now. Colton Miller is the anchor of that offensive line. He hasn't practiced yet. He's recovering from offseason shoulder surgery. I think he makes the line significantly better when he's there. Left guard, they drafted Jackson Towers Johnson to step in, and he hasn't practiced. Well, he's been practicing now in a red jersey, but he hasn't really gotten up to speed yet, so we don't know if he's going to be able to be the opening day starter. So they've got veterans, Andres Pete and Cody Whitehair playing over there. The right side, Dylan Parham's supposed to be better because he's on the right side, which is more natural, but he's had some struggles here in the preseason. There's a good battle at right tackle there. Munford, I think, is pretty good, but DJ Glaze is, you know, he's kind of a work in progress. He's got some talent. He might be able to take that job at some point. And Andre James in the middle is good. So the offensive line is weird because I think they can be good, but they really haven't shown it yet. So they're going to be pretty middle of the road, I think. But then their skill position players are great. Like, they've got so much talent on the outside. They've got Brock Bowers looks amazing. Michael Mayer is taking a massive step forward this offseason. Of course, Devontae Adams, and I think Jacoby Myers has long been criminally underrated. He's really good. So you've got all the pieces in place, I think, at the skill positions, if the quarterback can step up, but that's just a big question, right? It's a lot of pressure on Gardner Minshew, I think, and potentially Aiden O'Connell, if he does take the job at some point, to do something with his talent, because the talent is there, and I think the defense is going to be very, very good.
How about Devontae Adams? I know there's some talk that he's unhappy with his contract. There is some talk about, you know, he may have lost a step in terms of his play. What do you see when you watch Devontae Adams?
Well, we haven't seen him much. I mean, obviously, we know what Devontae Adams is. We saw him last year. We saw him practice every day. And when he is there, he practices really hard. But I think maybe not really talked about nationally as much that he his family did just have a baby. His wife, Devin, gave birth like last week. So he was gone for about 10 days of training camp, which also didn't help the quarterback's development, right? I mean, you're going to want to have that guy out there to throw to try to make you look better. And they didn't have him. So he hasn't been there a whole lot. He didn't play in the game the other day. So we'll see where he is, but I don't think anybody's worried about where Davante Adams is physically. Mentally, is he frustrated with the situation? Perhaps. I think we'll find out more and more, but he's never been afraid to kind of show that frustration. We saw that certainly in the receiver documentary, and we've seen it the time he's been here. He's really, really good, but I don't know, and he loves Vegas. Like, I think if he didn't love the city of Vegas, he'd already be gone. But he does love it here. It's closer to his family. I think that's what kind of kept him around a little bit, but I don't know how long that lasts if things don't go well. You know, they got two road games to start the year at the Chargers, at the Ravens. They could potentially be 0-2. And at that point, when do some, you know, some rumblings start to get out there that, you know, maybe he's not happy here?
And will the Jets come calling, right? Adam Hill of the Las Vegas Review-Journal joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. So the season win total for the Raiders is 6.5. There is juice on the over here, so the expectation that they'll get over that number. The Broncos, meanwhile, just 5.5, and there's been a lot more positive talk about Denver. Their strength of schedule, relatively similar here. As far as the AFC West stacks up, where do you rank the Raiders right now?
Man, I thought they were third ahead of the Broncos, but I think that there's probably some concerned people around here about how good Bo Nix has looked, and potentially that he would be able to step in. And I actually don't. I think even if it was potentially Jarrett Stidham playing, like, I don't think he's terrible either. So I think the Broncos could be okay. I didn't believe in them, you know, before the preseason started. And I hope that I'm not just buying into some preseason hype. And I usually tell people to temper expectations from what they see in the preseason. But I think they look a little bit better than I thought they would. And I think that should probably concern the Raiders. I still feel like the Raiders have owned them the last few years. I think they're 9-1 in the last 10 games against the Broncos. So, you know, they've controlled the series. But I think those are the teams battling it out at the bottom of the division. And, you know, I don't think anybody's awful in the division, but I think those two teams at the bottom. And I am, as a, you know, avowed Michigan homer, I obviously think that Jim Harbaugh is going to do great things with the Chargers. So it could be tough sledding for the Raiders. And I think it could be a long season.
All right. So what does success, if you're Mark Davis, look like this year for the Raiders?
I mean, it's a great question. I'm sure my answer is different than his. I'm a big believer in the markets, right? And I think if you were to win more than those 6.5 games, if you were to win 8 games, I think would be a great season for this team where they are. Now, I'm sure that's not what Mark Davis thinks. I'm sure that's not what Antonio Pierce thinks. But to me, that would be pretty impressive. They're favored in exactly 2 games this season. You know, we've seen the numbers for all the games of the year. They're favored twice. Like, this is going to be a very difficult season. And if you were to win 8, I think that's a really good year. But I think it's more about, you know, potentially seeing progress. You know, if I don't think Gardner Minshew is a long-term answer, but if he gives you, you know, some steady play and carries you guys along, and the rest of the roster looks ready to drop in a quarterback, right? I mean, if you get the rest of the roster ready to where they're just a quarterback away, like, that's what I think you really want to see out of this team. But I don't think that's how they see it. I think that they believe they can make the playoffs. I don't see that as a possibility for this team.
Adam, we've only got about 30 seconds left, but does that belief really stem from the defense and the talent that is all over the place, it seems, on that side of the ball?
I mean, I think they can be very, very good. And I think people aren't talking enough about Jack Jones. He is much more comfortable here, and he's just playing a really high level. He got burned the other day on a touchdown. He was very unhappy with himself. Obviously, the defensive line could be really good. Ja'Cory Bennett's taking a big step up, and the safeties are very, very underrated. Trayvon Merrick and Marcus Epps, they're really good. And just to go back real quick, I'll say that also progress would be Antonio Pierce being better in game management. That would be a huge development for this team.
Yeah, because even question. In the preseason, we've seen it.
Great job, Adam.
Adam, I'm glad. See, I thought we were going to end on a positive note about the defense, but then you had to go there. But this was fun. Appreciate you.
Thanks, guys.
Adam Hill, check out his work at the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Appreciate his time on the Progressive Guest Line. A great point there. When we come back, we're wrapping things up on the Lombardi Line. React a little bit to that. He also made a good point about his belief in Jim Harbaugh with the Los Angeles Chargers. Harbaugh has a very strong belief in his quarterback, Justin Herbert. Got some fun sound to play for you from him on the podium. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Wrapping up hour two of the Lombardi Line. Thanks for hanging out with us today, wherever you may be watching or listening. VSiN.com, YouTube TV, the iHeartRadio app. Maybe you're catching us in podcast form later on, which you can always do, VSiN.com/podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. We had a great conversation with Adam Hill, which I want to react to in a moment, Michael. But we had some interesting news come through over this last hour in college football that, as many of you know, the nightcap of the week zero slate in college football, Delaware State at Hawaii, apparently, and a spokeswoman for Delaware State confirmed this, the team missed their 10.5-hour flight out to Honolulu today because of a bus snafu trying to get to the JFK airport. Quote from the spokesperson, "We're working on a plan." Oh my goodness. How, like,
yeah,
like they have these poor kids.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
It's such a shame. I mean, you know, Delaware State's a small school in Dover, Delaware. They don't have a lot of money. This is a paycheck for them to go out to Hawaii to collect some money to keep their program afloat. They're not one of the big players. It's a predominantly African-American school. And the fact that they're very close to Philly and they chose to fly out of JFK tells you the flights were cheaper. They're flying commercial. You know, they don't have they're not chartering a plane to Hawaii, bringing alumni, all that. And so we are flying commercial. You know, they just left them in the dust. And I'm sure Delaware State probably had 80 seats on that plane, and whatever airline decided not to hold it, or they were too far away to hold it. So it's an unfortunate situation. What's unfortunate is these smaller schools have to try to play these bigger schools mm-hmm. just to get paychecks. And look, you and I both know Hawaii's not like a financially secure team. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. They're going to go all the way to Hawaii to get a check. They could have played somebody else closer at home. But I think to me, this is one of the sad parts of the haves and the have-nots.
Yes, and it's not like Hawaii is a world beater, but they're a 38.5-point favorite in this game. Like, this is an important moment for Delaware State. But that, to give you guys a little bit of context, like how long this is, this 10.5-hour flight for them to go play Hawaii is longer than the trip for Florida State to get to Ireland for their week zero game. This is also going to be an internal body clock midnight kickoff for them being out there in Hawaii. So just a lot of factors. They're flying out there so early for a reason, and you just hate it for the kids that they have to go through this type of a situation. Hopefully they do get it figured out sooner rather than later. I've been talking about this game more than I would normally because I've been joking with everybody. If you have a rough day betting college football in week zero, don't chase on Delaware State, Hawaii. And now Delaware State's just chasing a flight to get to Hawaii in the first place. So certainly feel for these kids. Hopefully they're able to get something worked out. Let's get back to the NFL here, though, for the last few minutes of the show. Michael, Adam Hill, I feel like, did a really good job of breaking down the realistic side of what's going on with the Raiders.
Yeah, I thought he did, too. And I think he nailed the Davante Adams. It's really an untold secret going on around the league. Devontae's not happy with his contract. And the fact he hasn't seen a lot of Davante is concerning. Now, inside the Raider facility, they're concerned, too, because they think when you watch the tape, it's obvious that Davante wasn't the same player he once was 2 years ago. Now, that happens because of Father Time. There's no reason to think he can't maybe snap back, but his explosiveness, his acceleration at the top of the route, he seemed to be always be covered. And I don't think he's happy here. I thought that Adam was perfectly aligned when he said that he would be gone if it wasn't for living there. I know three of the guys who interviewed for the GM job said, let's trade Davante Adams while we can get something for him at a high number. And so he's worried about, is he have anybody to get him the football? And I don't think the relationship that was so connected last year between Antonio Pierce and Adams is the same because of situation. So that bears noting. And I think he's dead right about their offensive line. What we see in the offensive line in terms of personnel people is they're an offensive line that just has centers. They don't have any guards. You know, he mentioned Parham struggling. Well, Parham, everybody knows Parham's a better center, but they went ahead and re-signed Andre James. So they had to put Parham at guard. He's not a good guard. And then Jackson Johnson Powers really didn't play that much at Oregon. He couldn't beat anybody out at Oregon, even though he was a second round pick. And now he's struggling. So now the inside of the line is Whitehair, James, and Parham. That's pretty weak. I don't care that they re-sign James. And you have a quarterback who needs the inside of the line protected perfectly. Now, they need to get Colton Miller back. There's no question. He's still their best lineman. But they're a little bit like the Bears for all the skill they have, and they do have good skill. He's right. They have good skill. Even with Adams on the other side of it, Trey Tucker's very good. You know, when the two tight ends can be dynamic, and Zamir White will run the ball hard. I don't think they're as good at running back as they once were, but the quarterback's got to stay healthy, and he's got to have protection inside.
Yeah, that's well put, Michael. You can have all the skill position talent in the world around you, but if the offensive line can't protect and you don't have a quarterback that, whether he's protected or not, you have a lot of confidence in, it's not going to make for a recipe for success for your offense, no doubt about it. And the Davante Adams part of it, I think, is interesting because initially when you saw the reports of, hey, well, maybe the Jets could be interested, I didn't really think that that had legs. And then I watched the receiver docuseries on Netflix, and you're seeing throughout the course of the season how genuinely miserable he was. And not only in the mic'd up segments, but when he's talking face to face with a camera, didn't have a problem sharing his feelings directly into the camera, talking to the audience. So you can tell there's discontent there. There was hope under Antonio Pierce that it might be different. And hey, maybe once they get out on the field and they're playing games, it is. But if it's not, what could that mean midseason? Sticking in the division here, Michael, I teased before the break a little something about the Los Angeles Chargers. And for anybody who didn't see the news, Justin Herbert returned to practice yesterday for the first time since dealing with that plantar fasciitis situation. Jim Harbaugh, if you didn't think he loved Justin Herbert, you will when you hear his reaction to having his quarterback back on the field.
Great. I felt like the music should be playing. I even thought I thought I heard music. Voices of Angels, maybe. It felt great.
Does that say more about how much he loves Justin Herbert or how much he hated having to watch Easton Stick out there in the preseason? You tell me.
You know, they cut Max Dugans today, yep, too. So, yeah, I think he loves Justin Herbert. I don't think this is a shot at Easton Stick, but I think he knows.
No shade, Easton Stick. North Dakota State, great, right?
Yeah, he becomes a lot better. He becomes a lot better when, you know, Justin Herbert's under center. Yeah. So, you know, I think that's the case, right? And look, you know, his personality and his talent level, what he's able to do with his team, you know, that personality is inflicted upon the team, and that competitive drive will be there. I guarantee you, he's going to make them really understand how to win games and how to play the best way to win the game.
How intriguing of a season opener is that matchup for you with the Chargers hosting the Raiders? They're a 3.5-point favorite, total 42.5 right now.
I think it's really, you know, if I felt like the Chargers had played better this summer, I would be all in on them to win the game because I think the Chargers can put pressure, Bosa and Mack, on the tackles of the Raiders, the inside people of the Chargers attacking. You know, and I think the Raiders are defensively, they're very good in the defensive front. They have a home crowd in Los Angeles.
For sure.
I think Herbert can make some plays in the passing game. But I just, the Chargers have not been that impressive. But if you made me push come to shove, I would take the Chargers and lay the 3 points.
Does that surprise you, knowing Jim Harbaugh and like how much he does put into culture and fundamentals and the offensive and defensive line, that they haven't had more success in the preseason?
No, well, I think a lot of it is they haven't had their quarterback, right?
Absolutely.
So that kind of makes things a little bit tougher. But I do think the offensive line will get better. Alt needs to get better, the right tackle. You know, the rookie first-round pick, he's going to have to perform at a higher level. I think this line will get better. Dobbins and Blake Corum will run the football. Mm-hmm. You know, when he's got to find the receivers, Ladd McConkey's got to stay healthy for him.
Season win total for the Chargers, 8.5. High expectations coming off firing their coach because Jim Harbaugh, just about everywhere he has been, not just about, it's factual, everywhere he has been, has done a good job not only turning around a program or a franchise, but doing it in short order. They're the second shortest shot in the AFC West, behind them, the Raiders, and the Broncos, the longest shot there. But the Broncos have been getting a lot of love from Michael Lombardi on the show today, so who knows how many games they could win this year.
I think it's only fair. Let me say, love in that I don't, as I wrote in my column, I'm not giving them love to think they're going to the Super Bowl. I just think they're going to be a better team, and I don't think they're going to have the pitfall of the 70-point game.
I'm with you. And we will do a deep dive into that column tomorrow. It is live now. It went up live during the show, vsin.com. Michael, throughout the entirety of the football season, is going to do regular weekly columns. Great stuff as always today, Michael.
I do twice
a week. Whoa. Meanwhile, they don't want me to write an article, Michael. It would just be the Daniel Jones weekly column. That's all it would be.
No, they want you, Stormy. Who doesn't want you? You're the star of the network. I mean, look at you. In a big limo.
Oh, my goodness. I'll see you tomorrow, my friend. Sharp Money is coming up next.